I'm Kevin Gallagher. For the next hour, I'm going to have Elio Villafranca here, who has a new album called Cinque. He's a composer and pianist. He's been here on our airwaves before on this program, and I really love the new double CD, Cinque, and we're going to have him talk about it. It's something WPKN can do well, because we have no parameters here. If I want to talk to Elio Villafranca about his compositions and his new work for the next hour and listen to the music, we will, and that's what we're going to do, a little long-form interview. Elio recently hit the trifecta and has reviews in Downbeat, Jazz Times, Jazz Is. I mean, there's a buzz about his work on this occasion. The Downbeat review was a 4.5-star rating, and Elio was recently named winner in Downbeat's critics poll for Rising Star Keyboard. So stick around. We're going to play a lot of the five-movement suite, which is known as Cinque, and then we'll be bringing Elio in here shortly, and we'll ask him all about it, okay? So I think an interesting hour ahead for you. Here's the first couple of tracks from the new CD by Elio Villafranca. It's called Cinque. And you'll see. Very interesting work.
It was 1814 when Joseph Cinque, formerly known as Singbe Pie, a West African man of the Mende people, was born as a free man in the country of Sierra Leone.
bring in Elio Villafranca now. Hi, Elio.
How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing good. So, Elio, wonderful work that you're putting out here. I'm really enjoying it. And so happy to have you with us for the next hour.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah. For everybody to know, Cinque is a five-movement suite inspired by the story of Joseph Cinque, who was, in 1839, led a successful revolt aboard the slave ship La Amistad, if people remember the movie that Steven Spielberg produced. That would give you an idea of what we're talking about. And this is a really ambitious project for Elio. Elio, maybe you could talk to the listeners and tell why you chose to pick the Cinque story as a foundation for this work.
Yeah, I mean, the Cinque story is fascinating, especially given in the political landscape that we're living off today, with what's happening in this country. It resonates with me a great deal. The whole thing started when I was commissioned by Jocelyn Consentin to write a piece to present at the Appeal Room. That was through Jason O'Lane. He created this band entitled The Nuevo Jazz Latino. And I wrote, the first of the pieces that I wrote was Troubled Waters. And then inspired by the story of the revolt of Cinque over the ship La Amistad. And the whole thing fascinates me. And then finally I decided, well, if I'm talking about or writing about his revolt, what about when he was free? And what about when he was captured? These images continue to come to me. And then that's when I was motivated to write the first movement entitled Cinque, and then the second one, The Capture, leading to the Troubled Waters. But then after I finished that, I realized, I was thinking, well, Cinque means five. What about other islands that have similar stories, of resilience and fight for freedom? And then I wanted to then talk about Haiti, which Haiti was had a lot to do with, you know, Haitian was the very first black free nation in the world. And then Puerto Rico, which I have a lot of experience playing with Puerto Rican musicians and also having a really strong traditions, the bomba, drums that comes also from the Congolese, part of Africa, and then look at five different islands, and then that was what inspired me altogether to write the entire thing, and then call it Cinque because Cinque was A, because it means five, and then B, also because it was the initial fire that started this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I listened to the work. I'm really struck at how well you seamlessly move between influences, African rhythms, Cuban roots, music, salsas, and straight ahead American jazz. I mean, you really incorporate it all. And there's even hints of some classical, I guess, from your training. How did all that, is that what you intended to do, try to draw it all together to make something completely unique?
Yeah, I mean, that's always been my thing. I normally, since I came to this country, I remember since my very first album, Incantation, I always felt that there was more to it rather than just me getting into my corner of Latin jazz or trying to absorb jazz in a very, in a very narrow-minded kind of way. I always felt that we all share a lot of things, and ever since I've been here, I've been just basically working really hard to kind of like to find that, to erase that line that divides us from one tradition to the next, kind of like to say, hey, we are part of the same thing. And that was basically my point when I did my album Caribbean Tinge, was to say, hey, New Orleans actually had a lot in common with the Caribbean, because actually New Orleans was considered the Caribbean back at the time, when the whole trade were happening, that was part of the circle, what I call the Caribbean ring. And it's just been that. I mean, that for me is the key of my tradition and my music. I don't even talk about Cuba so much. Normally, I now start talking more about Caribbean music because the roots are all over the place. We have a lot of influence from Haiti, and Puerto Rico has a lot of influence from us as well. We have influence from Puerto Rico. I mean, it's a big old part of the deal. It's everybody's together on this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you know, my family that I married into is from Pinal del Rio, and I credit my brother-in-law Osvaldo for sparking my interest in Afro-Cuban and Latin music, and he really, you know, turned me on to a lot of good stuff. You know, I read that it can be said that Elio Villafranca can be said to have come from Congo, Cuba. Can you explain that? I mean, tell us about the Congolese community in Pinal del Rio, something that we don't know.
Yeah, I was born in a very small town called San Luis in Pinal del Rio. It's like from the capital of Pinal del Rio, it's like another 25 kilometers going west and then a little bit down south. Not down all the way to the water, but like more down, more closer to the south coast of Cuba than the north coast, coast of Cuba. And that region is the region of tobacco. It's the region where all the Cohiba cigars came from. At least the Cohiba, where they made the Cohiba cigar. And some of the Cohiba cigar in Havana, but the leaves, which is the most important component to it, come from my region, from Pinal del Rio, from San Luis specifically. And ever since, when I was a kid, I always experienced this type of drumming that was very rare, you know, these very large drums and witnessing how they tune the drums with fire and all that. But when I was a kid, I was more into the fire rather than being more into the drum, because, I mean, being a kid, that's what we do.
But then
I went to music school, and then when I went to music school, then I started realizing, oh, wait, this was unique. And what I was, you know, when I became more a conscious musician, I realized that I was experiencing this really unique form of drumming, and then researching, it's like, okay, yeah, this is Congolese music, and specifically the name of the drum is Tambor Juka.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it's called Tambor Juka, and actually the Tambor Juka is really fascinating, because I started to, you know, after I realizing this, I started to study and investigating, and I started hanging out with them and going to their homes and documenting for years, like for about 15 years now. So this CD has been basically in the making. The whole thing has been in the making almost, if you think about it, like for 15 years when I started researching about this music. And then I started talking to them, and then, you know, trying to get more access to what they believe and the music, and eating with them, and, you know, but I was mainly documenting. What is fascinating about this drum is that this drum essentially doesn't have a religious component to it, even though it's a Congolese tradition, but at the same time, they will use in every religious activity, they will start with Tambor Juka, and then they will go to the ceremony. They could use Kinfuiti, they could use all the drums that are more religious related, but Tambor Juka was always the choice of drum to start, because it's a very festive celebratory things. And also, it is believed that Tambor Juka was the very first drum ever heard in Cuba.
Really?
And the reason why is for this particular reason, you know, because Tambor Juka was not religious. And, you know, it didn't have to have very specific thing to be, in order to be played. Anybody could play them, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then whenever they were going to do a celebration, they wouldn't start with the religious celebration. They start first with something up front, with music, and, you know, there would people eat and all of that. And they would use Tambor Juka to opening. That creates a notion that, well, these drums were the first one to be heard. And also, there's very rustic-looking drums. You're thinking about the drums from the Yoruban religion or the Lukumi or, you know, they have a very, very complicated tuning system, and the shape of the drum is very difficult too. The same thing with the Arara drum, for instance. The tuning system is very difficult to do, and it's very elaborate, right?
We should maybe explain to the audience that it's made from an avocado tree log, I understand.
Yeah, exactly. The Tambor Juka is made out of avocado tree, and the reason why they use avocado tree is because avocado tree, once it gets old, already gets kind of hollow inside.
Uh-huh.
So it has like the inside start rotten, and then it gets a little bit kind of soft, and then they get that out, and then they use fire to smooth the inside part out. And what they told me was, like, you have to be careful with the fire, because normally when you use fire, the fire tends to find a crack on the wood because they're looking for air. Mm-hmm. So you have to monitor that very, very carefully, and then kind of like smooth the inside part out. And then they use a goat skin or, you know, any other kind of animal skin. They nail it around one end. After it's wet, you know, they nail it around. And then to tune it, they use fire. And then when they put it near the fire, the skin stretches. And that's what creates the pitches and the drum.
Oh, I get it.
Mm-hmm. And you can see it. I mean, it's very simple in a way. It doesn't have, it's very not easy to make, but what I mean is like it's not as elaborate as all the drums, so it makes sense. It would have been like very easy to create and very easy to perform.
From the liner notes, I see it's a very long, skinny drum.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. Is there an example on the CDs that we can play them that would show the tempo?
You can play the very first track, the intro, actually, those are tambor yuca. And then also you can play, actually, from disc 2, you can play track 13.
Okay, so let's play track 1 from the first disc and track 13 from the second disc.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an example of the tambor yuca.
Tiempo España. Dios mío, ¿qué es esto? Pregunto yo. Ahora vamos a ver. Criollo, oye, criollo. Yo conversé con un viejo que tenía tres nariz. Yo conversé con un viejo que tenía tres nariz. Tres bocas, tres dientes y los ojos así, igual que los del cangrejo. Tenía un bigote ese viejo que se lo amarraba atrás. Y él siempre tomaba el agua en una lata de gas.
¡Dilo!
Malugada, oye, malugada. Pobrecita malugada.
Ah, malugada.
Malugada es malugada.
Ah, es malugada.
Malugada es malugada.
Ah, malugada.
Malugada es malugada.
Ah, malugada.
Pobrecita malugada.
Ah, malugada.
Baja, baja malugada.
Ah, malugada.
Malugada es malugada.
Ah, malugada.
Pobrecita malugada.
Ah, malugada.
Ven y baja malugada.
Ah, malugada.
Ah, va a llorar.
We're listening to a selection from the new double CD Cinque from Elio Villafranca. Elio is on the phone with me.
Hi.
He's the composer and the pianist of this work. Mm-hmm. There's the drum. So we're listening to the tambor yuca there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you were out there recording this yourself, correct?
Yes, correct, yeah.
It's really fascinating. The quality is excellent. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, and so how did you go about doing it? Why don't you tell us a story about how you were doing this, collecting these bits of sort of like folklore music out there in the islands?
Well, I have a musicologist in me, or anthropologist in me, that I always, whenever I go, I always like to document, because I really believe that the best way to freedom is understanding your roots. And I like to be free in terms of my mind, and like to be free in terms of my artistic liberty, and I want to always put meaning to my music. I really believe that one of the things that we as an artist, and especially as a jazz musician, so musicians in general, need to do is to actually do the work, so to connect, that we can connect, create bridges between cultures, rather than just writing music for just to write music. You know, and what I did was, and whenever I go into could be to Cuba, to Haiti. When I went to Haiti, it was also a fascinating story as well. You know, I bring with me just a camera and microphones, and you know, I ask permission if it would be okay to you know, I'm doing a research, and I like to have access to this music. I want to learn about it. And in this case, with the community of Tambor Yuka, the reason why I'm documenting even more about that is because these drums, it used to be, they were, you know, when an Nkisi are the places, the sacred places where this music was practiced, is practiced. So at the start of the island, there were 9 Nkisis in Cuba. 2 in Pina del Rio, 1 in Havana, 1 in Matanzas, and then 2 in the middle of the Cuba, and then another 2 somewhere in the east side of Oriente. But right now, out of those 9 Nkisis, there's only the one that survived at the one in Pina del Rio, near my hometown. You know, and this music basically is disappearing. And every time I go to my community, I notice, like, the younger generation, you know, are not necessarily into, you know, continuing this, because, you know, the cell phones are getting into Cuba now, and people are more into that, or into more commercial forms of music, and that worries me a little bit. And when every time I talk to the elderly there, they tell me, like, well, you know, it's hard to ask this, you know, our generation to kind of, like, to take care of this. And always the fear and the threat is that things will, you know, disappear in a way. And then I would think, well, maybe my way to preserve this is just basically exposing as much people as I could to this music, so people know about it, and then it's an interest in understanding and learning, and, you know, and listening.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but that's why you like Arsenio Rodriguez, correct? That he's a person who brought the African rhythms into the Cuban music more than anybody
Absolutely.
Else.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, I mean, Arsenio, I mean, he was one of the pioneers on bringing, you know, elements from the Congo, actually, from Congolese music into the popular scene. He was one of our treasures in the traditional song, you know, and he was very influential in developing what, you know, what people knows now about salsa and, you know, or any other things related to the danceable, you know, Cuban music, if you will. But at the same time, you know, there were older people, you know, doing that as well. You know, if you're thinking about the mambo, like from Damaso Perez Prado, also have some influence about that. There were a lot of other composers that did, you know, try to kind of like, oh, they did, not the only try, but they did kind of incorporate this more into the music scene. But it was more, to my perspective, it was more about, like, the initiation of it, you know, because it was more about the language and the word, some words from the Congolese traditions that were not necessarily used in the popular scene on danceable Cuban music, and some of the rhythm, the Afro, for instance, and that was developed from that kind of interest in this Afro-Cuban music being into the popular music. There was a lot of things that were done. But what I'm trying to do here is just go even more deeper than that, and then kind of try to find ties between cultures. Like, for instance, since I came from a Congolese tradition, when I went to Haiti, I went to basically research specifically what is the Congolese version of a music version in Haiti of what I've experienced, you know. And then mm-hmm. I went to these Lacus. Lacus are the areas where they practice this tradition. And then I went to some Congo Lacus, and I went to even some voodoo areas and Springs voodoo. Voodoo is not Congolese necessarily, but I experienced all of that. And also Springs Rada, which Rada is their version of Arara. Like what is Arara for us in Haiti is Rada. And, you know, I experiment all of this. And also in Puerto Rico, I've been in Puerto Rico many times, and I went to the Bomba festivals. And the Bomba is also a form of their Congolese version of music. So I was trying to find what are the ties. And everything is related. Like, for example, the rhythm, a lot of the rhythms of Bomba are related to Makuta rhythms from Cuba. This very similar rhythm, you know, it's very similar form of approaching of in terms of the organization of the instrument, who improvises, who supports the basic of the rhythm, all of that, because it's a system, right? Every tradition, every culture have a system in terms of music. Congolese system is different than Yoruban system. Yoruban system is different than Iyesa system, and different from Abakwa system. And it's just very interesting to know all of this and find ties between cultures this way.
It's so complicated. You know, I think for the educated, or, you know, you have a, even if you have a familiarity about the Afro-Cuban and the other traditions in Haiti and Puerto Rico, that you don't understand that this was a huge uprooting of tribes in Africa brought into the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And these communities settled. I mean, Congolese were in every island, and that's what you're saying, basically.
Exactly.
So it's spread around quite a bit.
Exactly. And then they found their way of kind of recreating what was in their memory in a particular island, given their circumstances. But the basic of the that made that Congolese tradition the same in every island is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to all those islands and you can tell, at least I could tell you, oh, this is Congolese rooted. Oh,
right.
Just by the way the drum is constructed, the way the drum is just have one skin or has double skin. I tell you that much. For instance, if you have a drum that is double skin, you know, you can say, well, this is more like a Yoruban drum, come from that tradition, because Yoruban, they have like this double skin kind of type of drumming. Thinking about Congolese music, then you have just single skin, you know, and if you think the arara or rada and all of that, they use sticks on the drums and hand, you know, like it's very specific, it's very interesting. And when you go to those islands, you can see how similar all this tradition, despite of being kind of different regions and things like that, how similar they still are. And that was basically what I was trying to do in Cinque here.
That's good. And we're talking to Elio Villafranca, who has the new album Cinque out. It's a body of work that encompasses narration, original composition, and selections of Elio's own field recordings, where we've heard a couple of them just now. Different forms of rooted Congolese rhythms in the Caribbean, especially the traditions of the tambor yuka, which we also heard, also practiced today in the region of Pinal del Rio, where Elio was born, and ganga, a rare culture that comes from Sierra Leone, Cinque's place of birth. That's Cinque, he was a slave, Joseph Cinque, who led the slave revolt on the La Amistad, the ship. It was one of the first successful overthrows of a ship, and they killed the captain, and they went to trial, and they got freed eventually and went back to Africa, a lot of them. And it was an arduous journey, to say the least. But like Elio says, a lot of this stuff is starting to disappear, and he feels the need for trying to preserve it. Is that where we're at there?
Yeah. Especially like when I went and interviewed the two ladies, Eleonor and you know, and the other lady in Matanzas, when they shared with me their ganga songs. And like at the time that I went and interviewed them, they didn't even have the drums to play that music, and they were like, at the time they were 80 years old, and they were telling me they were saying like, we are the last people who speak this language in a way.
Wow.
And I remember that they have even a lot of the chant, they have it written in a notebook, because they were forgetting themselves also every details, because I mean, this music is transmitted generation by generation, like home to home. It's not taught in school, it's not taught in any other ways. It's just you have to be in the family kind of like to learn about these things.
Mm-hmm. So Elio, let's listen to something else. What do you want to play for everybody, and tell us, set it up, tell us why we're going to listen to it.
Okay, we can listen to The New Sky, which is track 14, movement number 3. And the whole thing about this New Sky, it's about the idea of people in Saint Domingue or Haiti, you know, maroons basically escaping and trying to find a new place where they start something new. And that track just goes into the other tracks called The First Colony, which is just basically when the maroons escape from their plantations, and when they run to the hills, a lot of times they found native Indians in those hills who also escaped previously from, you know, also from the colonization effort by the Spanish or the French or the British. And then I always wondered, like, how was that first encounter, like an African person just meeting for the first time a native Indian, like complete different race. You know, it must be fascinating to come to that, and yet there was a beautiful thing, because a lot of time the native Indian, they gave protection to the runaways or the maroons from slave maroons. And in some of the situations I read, that also then the maroons were sometime enslaved again by those native Indians. Mm-hmm.
So this is from Disc One. We're going to listen to New Sky. Should we go through narration and the first colony in Congo also?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what we'll listen. We'll be right back with Elio Villafranca after a couple tracks from his new 2-CD set called Cinque.
Thank you.
1655, the English attacked and overtook Spanish Jamaica. During the siege, the enslaved Africans ran to the mountains where they found refuge and freedom amongst indigenous people.
From Elio Villafranca's new album, Cinque. It's the first colony. Elio, I'm going to make a stab at that Steve Touré on Conch Shell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. My ear hasn't failed me. So, anything you want to tell the listeners of what we were just listening to?
Yeah, what you were listening is just basically my interpretation of what was the fusion of that meeting between the runaways or African, free Africans with the native Indians. And that's why I'm using, what you heard was the Steve Touré playing the conch shell, which is a symbolic, in a way, representation, not so much symbolic, but actually real representation of what, native Indian use, what kind of instrument they use to produce music and to communicate. And then the drumming that you heard behind that was called the balsier, and it's a drum from Santo Domingo. It's a very interesting drum because you sat on it and then you play and then you adjust the tuning of the drum by using your leg, and it's a very interesting drum also. And then I make this mix of these two instruments to kind of represent that kind of conversation between the two cultures.
Mm-hmm. It's all very fascinating. I want to tell you folks that the booklet that makes up the liner notes is quite extraordinary. It's really beautiful art, Elio. And it's also a complete history lesson. If you read it and you don't know much about the Caribbean music, you learn a lot. It's written by Ned Sublett, who wrote a book called Cuba and Its Music. And he's pretty well known about what's going on down there. And he writes a fascinating history lesson of the music and the African diaspora of the Caribbean. And if anybody is interested in music of the region, you'll be pleased with this beautiful booklet, the purchase of the CD.
Yeah, that's what I told my... when I first was doing before the album was released, that's what I was telling my friends, like, if you don't like the music, at least get it so you can get the booklet, because the information that is shared on the booklet is unbelievably, for me, it's just fascinating, because I was learning too when I was investigating and writing, I knew the only person that I wanted to write the liner notes was Ned, because he's such an amazing artist, and he knows so much about this music.
Obviously.
That I said, you need to... I talked to him, like, you are my number one person to call for this. And I was so fortunate that he was able to...
Awesome.
And I actually was writing part in here, part the other part in Cuba, because he was traveling to Cuba, and it was he was very generous to to put the time into it.
It's going to be a lost art. The packaging on the CD and the booklet are just extraordinary, really really well done. As I said, we're talking to Elio Villafranca about his new album called Cinque. Elio, there's religious figures and religion playing a big part in your compositions and also throughout the history of the music of the islands. I mean, there's always saints and pagan gods. There's Santa Barbara and Chango, and and you have, I hope I don't butcher this, Malagula and Madre Agua on a couple of your compositions, right? Could you want to talk to about that? We're running out of time here, but let's spend some time about religion and its and its interplay with the music.
Yeah, Maluagda is a chant. Is one of the chants that really one of the chants that most fascinated me about what I heard in my in the tradition of Congolese music, the tambor juka. It's a beautiful song, and I remember when I first recorded that song with them. Documented that song with them, I noticed that it was, they ran very deeply, and if you hear the voice of the singer in the song, in like you can once again in track 13 or second disc, you hear his voice cracking a little bit, and I could swear that he was almost crying. And then I really asked them, so what is this song about? And then they really didn't go deep on it, because I mean I'm not practicing the religion necessarily, so there are certain things that I can't have access to it from a religious perspective, but they kind of told me, and they let me know that that was a very important figure in their, you know, in their tradition. And Madre Agua is a sign. I don't know if you have told your audiences that the CD also has many, have few signs, and I put the meaning of the signs so like they know what is the symbolic meaning of that.
Yeah, particular. I see them there, yeah.
Yeah. And Madre Agua, the sign of Madre Agua, which is the one, if you open the album, you know, once it's open, you see a sign in this one, and then you see the other sign on the other end on this too, and that's the sign of firma, we call it firma in Congo language, of Madre Agua. And Madre Agua, that the firma that I put there on Madre Agua is the first firma in Africa from where all the Madre Agua's firmas or signs were developed. So that this is, was the first of the signs in the Congolese tradition of Madre Agua. And why Madre Agua is very important in Cuba? Because Madre Agua, you know, Cuba being an island and being surrounded by water, you can imagine that a symbol like that or a sign like that related to sea waters and water in general is very important in the island because, you know, provides protection, food, and everything. So that's the reason why Madre Agua was there as one of the most strongest signs in the Congolese tradition.
Let's listen to a little bit of it. Madre Agua. Taste of Madre Agua. We're with Elio Villafranca, and it's a pleasure, Elio, talking about this. It's not often that a radio station can do this, of course, sort of like spontaneous live mixing of everything and talk to the composer. And the,
it's beautiful. I enjoy it, and this, I really appreciate it. Thank you so
no
much.
No problem at all. That's why we have listener-supported WPKN, so we can try to stretch the parameters in the way we do things here on the radio.
The album is really vast, it's very wide, you know, two CDs, and it's really hard to get into all those things, but every single track has a very specific meaning. Like, for instance, very quickly, La Burla de los Congos, you know, it is told that Congolese had a really great sense of humor, and then, in a way, I wrote music in relation to that, you know, that, and that piece, La Burla de los Congos, features Wynton Marsalis, and then, you know, on trumpet. And then I share the story that motivated that particular piece, which the story in track 12 was this too. It's called Congo Story. it's a story that they've told me, and by the way, that story's been transmitted from generation to generation within the Congolese community, and it's really fun to hear. I know it's in Spanish, but for those who can speak it, will understand it.
I understand.
And I think it's a translation of that story in the booklet as well in English, so also people know what has been said on that particular story.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, I mean, you can really learn a lot from the booklet on this on this double CD. It's really a wonderful work. So we're going to finish with Conga y Comparsa. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're going to listen to?
Yeah, Conga y Comparsa basically is, I decided to end the suite with that, the music part of the suite with that, just because it's one of the most festive and one of the most inclusive form of music in Cuba. You know, in congas and comparsas, you know, they're long dated. You know, in Cuba, initiated in Santiago and also in Havana. There's two styles of congas and comparsas. One is Santiago, one is Havana. They're very different, but they serve the same purpose. And the style that I approach in this particular album was the Santiago one, because I really like that, the version of their conga. Not better, but it has a very funky feel to it. And the way the music is structured is that it's in the middle of the song, the music flips in, and then becomes like this fast jazz kind of like thing, breaks from the conga and then goes into jazz. The reason of that is, when I was a kid, whenever I used to go to the congas, My mother used to say, like, don't go there because, you know, the fight could break up and it's a lot of, you know, fast-moving things. And as a kid, it wasn't necessary. My mom didn't feel safe for me as a kid to go there, but I was fascinated and would just go to the congas and things like that. And then the congas normally starts in a very informal settings, and then they become together at some point, and then people participate, and people dance and play. And then the fast movement on the meter, what the section, the solo section is a way to say, you know, like to represent a little bit what happened inside, like the breakup of the things, and maybe argument and things. But then it comes back again to being again the conga. And that's basically my way of expressing my experience going to the congas as a kid and all that. But it's a very fun form of music, and that's what we're going to finish with. Yeah, and before we end, I just want to say thank you to you for having me in the program. And also, I need to mention that, you know, this is a fan-based project from Arishare, and then also was produced by Jason O'Lane, who's the musical producer for this particular album, and Roberta Brenza, who also is the executive producer. And I have a lot of help from people that helped me to basically, I'm sorry to repeat, help to put this together and to make it, you know, happen. So I'm sure. Grateful to all of them.
Yeah, we'd like to thank Scott Thompson too for helping put this all together for us to be
Scott
here today.
Yeah, my guy. He's like he's been my angel throughout this project.
That's great. He's a good guy, and he's also a member of the staff here at WPKN. So that's
I know.
In the family.
No, it's beautiful. He introduced me to you and to your program. Yes, exactly. And
this is your third trip here.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Good. Oh, you're always welcome back. It's such interesting, fascinating stuff, and always great, great music. And folks, you might want to go out and pick up this double CD called Cinque. Beautiful artwork, beautiful music inside, and it's all made by Elio Villafranca, who have you been hearing on the air here at WPKN this afternoon. So, Elio, I hear you're on your road. You're out to go on the road now, so safe journeys, and come back and make more great music.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And here's the song we said we're going to play, Conga y Comparsa. And a little surprise for anybody who calls right now at 203-331-9756. We'll give somebody this double CD. First person to call gets a CD. There's only one of them. 203-331-9756. Good luck. Thank you. Well, somebody lucky got Cinque from Elio Villafranca. He's a gentle soul. I love him. He's a great artist. And I tell you, folks, I can't tell you enough about the artwork in this CD. It's just beautiful. I hope it gets nominated and wins in the packaging category for the Emmys, Grammys, rather, because it's really beautiful. And if you want to learn something about African-influenced music of the Caribbean, then this is the CD to have for sure. I'm Kevin Gallagher. We're WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and online at WPKN.org.